So what are you drinking?
Red, of course. And I believe this is a Sangiovese.
It's what?
A Sangiovese.
Oh, Sangiovese. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
What are you drinking, K-Dub?
I'm drinking fancy. I got back to my old fashioned, and this is in celebration of my friend Kim from high school, actually from junior high. I hadn't talked to her in a while. I talked to her the other night, but she actually saw me post about old fashioned, so she decided she's gonna make one. So this is for Kim.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Changing lives.
Yes. And I decided that because my week was such a that I wasn't cooking tonight, so I went and got some pho from Teeter Thai.
I didn't know we had a good pho place here.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good. Have you ever tried it?
I haven't, but you know, my allergist has banned me from Thai restaurants because of the severe peanut allergy. Oh, yeah, so
yeah.
If it's a Thai place, I wouldn't.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Z, what you drinking? Water on the rocks or
not? So here's what I've decided. I've decided to say things in a different language. So I am je bois de l'eau.
You what?
I'm drinking water in French.
I speak French.
No.
That wasn't no.
Yeah, what, I do wait, too. What? That was not French.
Yeah, it was je bois de l'eau.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. No. I am drinking water.
No.
Survey says.
Well, you know, it was with a twist, you know? So
welcome back to Three Black Dots with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
Okay, topic for today, black iatrophobia.
Correct. And we should call it that. And then
SAT words, I love it. I had to look that bad boy up. I was like, iatrophobia.
Mistrust of the medical community and how that impacts what happens when you show up in your doctor's office and there are recommendations made maybe for like a trial, which is like a huge, you know, for a lot of people, that kind of thing.
So what was interesting about the whole conversation or the iatrophobia or whatever Zanetta was trying to talk about, I had a patient show up on Thursday, happened to be an African-American woman. Bright lady, lawyer, talking about how she's had people in the community who literally go into the doctor's office and don't ask any questions, right? So it's not even just about fear of going to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fear of interacting with the doctor or not feeling as if you can interact with the doctor. And sometimes that's with our older Black folks, because they remember a time where they weren't supposed to question or couldn't question. But there is still this sentiment, I think, you know, significant proportion of Blacks that they're not supposed to ask questions or question the doctor. And oftentimes they're given instructions or told to take something and not know why, or will not have any care instructions given to them. And an example of this came up because one of my staff recently had a procedure done, and there was complications, but she went in for her follow-up appointment where they were removing devices. Literally, she said, the doctor came in, pulled the device, and was out the door practically before the device was even pulled from her body. There was like no aftercare instructions whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So is it a situation where do people not feel comfortable going to the doctors? Do they not feel comfortable when they're in a doctor's office? Do they feel like they can't have communication? Or do they feel like the doctors don't want to have communication with them? So or maybe it's all of that.
Or is it all of the above?
I think it's all of the above. I started with this because we were talking about the COVID vaccine. So I was talking to my mom and, you know, I was like, really, you can't really feel safe until this vaccine comes out. And then she says, oh, when it comes out, I'm not getting it.
Oh,
and I was like, well, why would you not get it? And she was like, oh, I don't get vaccines. I don't get flu shots. I don't get the pneumonia vaccine. And then my dad chimes in. He was like, oh, yeah, I don't get vaccines either. Because when I was in the Army, they used to shoot us up with everything and we would have all kinds of reactions. Then talk to my in-laws. They don't get vaccines. And I was like, these are reasonable people who, one, don't trust medicine. right? They don't trust the medicine. So there's
these are two separate conversations that have physician children.
Right.
That still don't trust medicine.
And so I am reading a book right now called Medical Apartheid. Have you read the book?
Yeah.
You read the book by Harriet Washington, right?
Yeah. Right?
I have not read it, but I know it.
Right. I've read it. It's on
black,
my shelf.
Black.
I know I don't read.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, that's okay. You smart though.
You should say you don't read, you know, outside of the myriad of grants and papers that you're writing yourself.
Right.
Man.
Continue.
Okay.
Some of us have time.
Right. So black iatrophobia, basically a fear of medicine or an aversion really to anything medical. And so I know we always... We've been saying this for the last several weeks. It really does go back to slavery. And it really goes back to slavery. And it really does. There are so many people who are complicit in this, right? So one, you have like your slave owners that didn't believe that the slaves were sick. You have the physicians being paid by the slave owners get the slaves better to get them back on the field. So really, if physicians were really true to their profession back then, they would take care of their patient, which were the slaves, and they would have been the ones to really document how bad slavery was because they saw all the injuries that these slaves had, right? And some physicians actually recommended beatings for the slaves because they didn't believe the level of pain that these slaves were in because they thought that they could tolerate so much pain. So, I mean, this is before you even get to the experimentation that they did on Black people routinely, that some slaves were just experimental, they were just human experiments. So you're taking that over time. And so in every research course that I've had, you know, we talk about African Americans and distrust of the medical system, and they always just say, oh, it's because of Tuskegee and the Tuskegee syphilis experiment.
Yeah. Yep.
No, this goes well beyond Tuskegee. Tuskegee was just, I mean, one drop in the bucket for all the other hundreds of years of injury that's been done to Black people in medicine. And so then you bring it forward to COVID, and one, you don't believe that Black people are sick. You go to the ER and you can't breathe, and they send you back home, and you go to die. You know, like, really, the establishment has not changed.
Correct. So let me just take it back, because you're absolutely right. The interesting thing is, when I give my lectures, particularly if I have a mixed audience, I love to show this picture of a Black slave whose back is riddled with whip lashings, right? All the scarification that he's had from the many beatings that he's had. And talk about the fact that, true to your word, the doctors of the day back then, first of all, they didn't believe that Black people were people. They were not people. They were chattel. So they were
chattel
property. Right. So it wasn't as if they saw them as patients per se. They were paid by the slave owners to get them well enough so that they could go back to work, like you said. So they oftentimes were not given treatment to make them better in the sense of to heal them completely. It was just to get them well enough so that they could continue to work. And so that even carried on. There was a lecturer that, and I can't remember her name right now, but she gave a lecture on the medical practices during the Civil War. So even during the Civil War, where you had Black regiments who were serving, the medical doctors who were in the armies, there were separate facilities for Black soldiers and white soldiers. So you're absolutely right. That legacy of seeing Black people as less than, even by medical professionals, continued on. And so when you look at the number of deaths that happened during the Civil War, obviously Black soldiers died at a much higher rate, and a lot of it's because they were not getting the same care. Yeah, that historical legacy goes on and on. And I wrote a paper, you guys may have seen this already, that was published in the JNMA, the Journal of the National Medical Association, that was about Milton Quiglis, who was one of the first Black doctors in Tarboro, North Carolina, who was recruited there. He graduated from Harry, and was recruited up to Tarboro, North Carolina, because that was where a lot of Black people in North Carolina lived. And at the time, the Black people were not allowed to be seen in the white physicians' offices. They had to kind of go into the, they had to wait in the back, right? They couldn't sit in the waiting rooms with white people and had the back entry, and they had to wait until all the white people were seen. So oftentimes they'd be sick and wouldn't even be seen. It's not even a matter of their feelings not even being, or their disease being downplayed. They weren't even seen. And so it was only when Dr. Quidless came into town where he actually was able to open up a practice that was really dedicated to the treatment of Black people.
When was that?
So he started his practice in 1940s or 50s, I believe. And so he actually practiced up until he almost till he passed away. He was in 1992, I think he was still practicing, 97. Mm-hmm. He was still practicing. He actually opened up his own hospital because the hospital back then wouldn't give him privileges. So he would have this rapport with his patients. He'd be treating his Black patients before he even came into town. They were doing surgeries on people's porches and that kind of stuff, or before he opened up his clinic. Then he decided that he was going to open up a hospital and a clinic just for Black people. But then the local hospitals, when they needed more advanced care, they wouldn't let him, they didn't give him privileges. Yeah, I mean, but we've heard that's a whole other conversation about Black right. physicians and how they've been treated. But yes, slavery on up until the modern era.
So fast forward to now with, you know, I guess the feeling that gets passed down.
Right.
You know. And now it's a little bit different, right? I mean, so we're, you know, our name, from what it says on the little logo in the corner of my screen right now, is Three Black Docs. So now we're in a time where we have Black doctors.
But do we though?
What is the, well, not many, mm-hmm. not enough to, but what is this sort of legacy in this history? How does this impact where we are now, right? Because what we've talked about a lot is pretty much, I mean, I don't want to speak in generalities, but a lot of the Black doctors that I know, you know, we're all oncologists, not oncologists, whatever, you know, take your specialty. Everybody knows about disparities in kind of everything. I mean, for us, we know, well, I'll say I know the most about cancer because that's what my specialty is, but we certainly know it plays out in maternal health and peds, you know, diabetes, hypertension, all that stuff. So we all are aware of it. And I feel like everyone I talk to wants to do something about it. But this gets back to our original conversation, like what can we do about it? You know, and if part of the problem we think is distrust, well, we know is distrust of the medical community. I mean, what can we do about that?
Sure. But I think that's what we're trying to do by starting a conversation. First of all,
yeah.
there will never be enough Black doctors to go around to right. take care of all Black people. And that is not at all what I think needs to happen.
Right.
I think there definitely needs to be awareness and cultural humility and the presence of individuals of color to help those who may not have been around people of color, might not have been raised around people of color, to help highlight some of the challenges that may exist for people of color when they come into medical establishments. There, not much has changed, and I can tell you, I've had colleagues tell me that they just feel disrespected, that nobody is listening to them, that I mean, Zanetta just talked about the COVID experience. People are going to the emergency room and being turned away, despite the fact that they're symptomatic. So that part of the problem is the healthcare system. But what I'd like to do, and this is where the advocacy piece comes in, how do we teach people how to advocate for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's both of you are also talking about. How do you teach people how to talk to their doctors? And I think it has to be it has to be something that people feel is important. But I don't know, Zanetta. I mean, your parents and your in-laws, like you said, they're educated and have
and will not sway on the issue absolutely will not sway. But I also think a lot of people don't truly understand how much this ties into slavery and how much of a historical issue this is. So on an individual level, so like when you go to the doctor, you know, it's important, one, to have a list of questions, right? Prepared. Like if you, I mean, I don't know. So we're not talking about vaccine, but I just, what's important to me is I want my patients to understand what's going on, because a lot of doctors will feel very rushed, right? You can make your doctor slow down. You can say, wait, I have a list. This is what I'm concerned about. You know, to even prepare ahead of time, there are many people who are just afraid to speak with their doctors because there's a power difference, right? And so you're not really sure what to say. You don't understand what's even being said. And I mean, one, know what your diagnosis is. What are you seeing the doctor for? If you are going to a doctor and you're not sure what you're seeing them for, don't leave that visit until you know why you're seeing that doctor.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, but see, back to Tiff's original point. I think I digressed. Oh, yeah. Back to Tiff's original
music
point.
Music to my ears. What?
You are so funny. It was about, I think,
I don't know.
You are so crazy. Oh my gosh.
She really is. She's special tonight, though.
So how do we begin? Tiffany, I don't know, because I think there's an individual component. I don't know. I mean, I can't even get my parents to get their pneumonia vaccines. So clearly I need help.
Well, my parents are vaccinated, so I don't know what to tell you.
That's so funny.
Here's one thing I know about practicing oncology that you two know as well. Like, nobody wants to see us ever, right? Like,
what do you mean?
Nobody wants a cancer diagnosis. Okay. So no one,
nobody wants to see an oncologist.
Period. Okay. So, to me, I'm like, if you're in the oncologist's office, chances are I'm going to talk my little heart out and you're really not going to hear what I'm saying because there are all these other thoughts going through your mind, right? Of like, I can't believe this is happening. What does this mean? How is the treatment going to be? Like, how long do I have to live? What does this mean for my family? Do you know what I mean?
So there's really good data, you know, just to say that patients only remember about 10 to 20% of
because you're not gonna hear what I'm saying, and I think that's totally normal. What I was getting to is bring somebody with you who can be another set of ears and sort of be the person, Zanetta, if you're saying ask questions and all of that. Like, just bring somebody with you to ask the questions and to be the other set of ears and to take the notes. Because already the expectation is a lot of what is going to happen, especially early on when you're talking like treatment planning and what's going to happen next and all of that, you're not going to hear. That's all.
Right. And so in the era of COVID, when we, you know, visitors can't come into these office appointments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you may need to make sure someone's on the phone, or if you're doing a telemedicine visit, that you have you know, other people with you. I agree. You should not do this by yourself.
But I do think that for all doctor's appointments, it's not just about oncology. Well, yes, oncology is special in the sense that, again, cancer is scary and people are frightened and their mind is already thinking cancer is a death sentence when it isn't for most. We can treat and sometimes cure cancers, most cancers, in fact. But these issues related to fear of the profession is so deep and so pervasive that we're not taking care of the prevention aspect, which from my perspective is really important because the disparities exist across the cancer continuum. which includes prevention.
Yeah.
It includes screening, and that happens in the primary care setting. So if we're not even getting people to engage with their primary care doctor, and that's where Zanetta was talking about how the doctors are oftentimes rushed. I think in oncology we have a little bit more luxury. I insist on that luxury for my patients. I say for my new patients, I want them to have an hour-long consultation with me because primary care does not have an hour.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of medical oncologists don't have an hour for their new consultations. Mm-hmm. But for primary care in particular, this is where having the questions up front or what are the things you want to talk about is really vital because those primary care doctors are oftentimes seeing people in 15-minute slots. And so they can only really address maybe one or two high-level questions at most. The challenge is that many people oftentimes don't know what questions to ask. And so if they're, for instance, going into the doctor and they have a new diagnosis of diabetes, the doctor has 15 minutes to talk to them about, here's a prescription I'm going to give you. But there's not much education that happens unless they have the support around that, meaning having a nurse or some other sort of individual navigator, nutritionist or whatever, to have conversations about the new diagnosis of diabetes. But oftentimes those people might not exist in communities that serve, particularly communities of color, although there are some, you know, so I know the federally qualified healthcare systems are trying to do better about that and providing those supports. But from my perspective, you know, yes, cancer is on one end of the medical continuum, but we just need to get to the basics.
Three Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Three Black Docs is produced by Wings Productions.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.